Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever the case may be. This is Mike from the Subaru Studios, rolling northbound on US 131. I had a run this morning and down to Spring Lake, Michigan. It's kind of west of Grand Rapids, north of Grand Haven. Pretty familiar area to me since I'm down there all the time, but anyway, I'm a fair bit north now on my way home near Cadillac, Michigan. And I thought I'd grab the microphone and do a little audio blogging or podcasting or whatever you prefer. It seems that whenever I can do these Mike Dell audio blog posts, it seems to be best to do it in the car. So that's what I'm doing. So sorry for the normal background noise, if there is such a thing. I don't know. I listen to these things, and I notice a lot of the noise, but I don't know if you guys do or not. But it's turning out to be a Chamber of Commerce day here, or Chamber of Commerce day. I could speak English. Right now it's 81 degrees, partly cloudy. Smooth sailing. Not too bad for the end of August, I guess. We've already had some cooler days. It's been hot the last, week or so. I was out of town Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this last week. Got to go out to Los Angeles. Ford sent me out there to drive their new C-Max Hybrid, and I'll have a complete review, or first drive impression, I guess would be the better way to put it. I'm going to actually do a complete review of the car here probably this fall, or maybe next spring. I'm not sure when they're going to give me a press car, but at some point they're going to give me a car to drive for a week. But so far it's just been the first drive impression. Got to go about, I don't know, probably 100 miles and in the C-Max Hybrid, a mix of city driving, freeway driving, and a little bit in the mountains. Drove out of Los Angeles. We were staying in West Hollywood, started there, and went out to the Pacific Coast Highway, which, by the way, is hard for me to say because every time I say Pacific Coast, I want to finish it with Hellway. That's Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov's original podcast there that he used to do from his car, or at least he started out that way, driving up the PCH. But anyway, we started out in West Hollywood, went up to the coast, and went up the Pacific Coast Highway, up to Malibu, and then up into the mountains there, which I was with Jeffrey Powers from Geekazine, and we both commented how much that area looked like the opening scenes of the TV show MASH, and then come to find out that's where they filmed it, so that makes sense. But anyway, it was an interesting drive. Never really driven a hybrid before, and it wasn't bad. It had plenty of get up and go, had plenty of room. Didn't see it as any sort of compromise. You think of hybrids as being kind of gutless wonders and, you know, all for economy and no performance, but this one had a little bit of performance to it. Reportedly, if you drive it sanely, you can get 47 miles per gallon, both city and highway, which is pretty darn good. Prius, I guess, gets about 40 combined, city and highway. And they certainly talked about the Prius a lot, which is, you know, I guess what they're going after. The car is kind of a high wagon version of, not even a wagon, but I don't know what you call it, a crossover sort of small thing based on the Ford Focus platform, And you know, if you've seen a Prius V, I guess the bigger Prius, it's kind of that class of vehicle. And in fact, I got to drive a Prius V. They had a few of them at our lunch break, where and they called that a competitive drive. So I got to do a little loop around in the mountains there in Malibu. And Prius was kind of nice too. You know, very comfortable car. I did notice that it seemed to work a lot harder to get up the hills than the Ford did, but wouldn't hold that against it. It's got a smaller engine. You know, it's 50 horsepower less in the gas engine department. I don't know what the specs on the electric motor is or are, but like I said, it seemed like it was working a little harder, but it handled fine. It was comfortable. It was a little weird, you know, all the gauges are in the middle of the dash instead of in front of you. The Ford seemed like a normal car. I mean, pretty much. It had this weird thing on the dashboard that grew leaves. The better you drove it, the more leaves you would grow. Kind of the alternative to the efficiency gauge, I guess. And of course, it had the full-blown Ford Sync system and my Ford Touch, which is really slick. I'd love to have a car with that in it. That's a neat system. It's kind of amazing that Microsoft could pull something like that off in partnership with Ford, but they did, and it's pretty slick. But yeah, I enjoyed the trip. Got to hang out with Jeff Powers there a bit, and we of course sampled some of the restaurants around the hotel there on Sunset Strip. And that was quite nice. Went to this one that was an old railroad car. It was kind of a hot dog. I guess their specialty is these chili dogs. They weren't anything like a Flint or Detroit Coney dog, but still, you know, really good. Real messy chili dog. And we went to this other restaurant right next to the hotel that was recommended highly, and it was really good. I had garlic shrimp, and it was 6 days ago, and I think I still have a little bit of garlic. So it was definitely heavy on the garlic, but I like it that way. But anyway, it was an interesting trip. Also got to try out, and I'm going to make a review on this too. Got to try out the Delta Airlines Economy Comfort class. See, they're finding new ways to charge you extra money. But on the way out, I made the mistake of getting a bulkhead seat, and that wasn't quite as nice as on the way back from LA. But the advantage of the economy comfort, at least on domestic flights, is you get about 4 to 6 inches more leg room. And in a normal economy class seat, I tend to my knees almost touch the seat behind me, or in front of me. If she's behind me, that'd be a trick, wouldn't it? But so on these, you know, it was a good 4 to 6 inches extra, you know, where I could definitely stretch my legs out completely straight, which was nice. The width of the seat wasn't any different. And of course, I don't know what happened, but used to be every time I got on an airplane, you know, there would always, almost nobody was sitting in the middle seats on the three seat rows. And I don't think I've been on a plane the last 10 years where it wasn't completely full. But anyway, that was well worth it. I didn't end up paying for it, but I guess they charge you like $40 extra or something. Also, the seat reclines more, which is a plus and a minus. On the plus side, you can recline the seat back, but the minus side, the guy in front of you can also recline the seat back more. And mean, it's not terrible because you got all that nice leg room. So, you know, and it worked. And if I wanted to, I could have put my laptop up on the tray table, and that would have worked out all right. But it was nice. And of course, they're up at the front of the economy cabin, so you get off the plane fairly quick, and you get priority boarding with that, which I never did understand until this trip why somebody would want to get on the plane first. And then I realized, well, now since they're charging $45 a bag, at least at Delta, for economy, that everybody's carrying on bags. Well, those overhead bins fill up quick, and they tend to fill up from the front to the back. So unless you want to put your bag halfway back in the cabin and then have to go back after it when you get to the airport, you know, when you get to where you're going, I do now understand why you want to get on first. But it worked out good for me, being that I was right behind the first class section, and the first class baggage bins don't fill up as much because if you buy a first class ticket, you get to check your bags for free. Or, well, not free, it's rather expensive, but it's included. They don't tend to fill up, so what I did was put mine in the first class section. So my bags flew first class, and I flew economy comfort, but it wasn't too bad. And like I said, I actually got a whole book read, which I highly recommend the book. It's Andy Andrews. He wrote the book The Noticer, and he wrote The Traveler's Gift, and, you know, it's kind of inspirational novels. Andy's a former comedian, so he also has some humor in there. But the book I read this time was called The Final Summit. It's a continuation of The Traveler's Gift, and it's kind of sci-fi, self-help, and comedy all kind of wrapped into one. It's a novel with a message, and I guess I won't spoil the message, but it's a two-word thing that humanity can do, both individually and collectively, to become a better society, I guess. I don't remember the exact words they use, but you'll have to read the book to figure out those two words. But it's rather simple. But a great story, and I got it all read on the two longer plane flights back and forth to L.A. And then Friday and Saturday. Friday and Saturday, I got to do a route with a courier company for FedEx. Well, not the guy that drops off at your door, but if you ever heard of FedEx Smart Post, it's a lot of Amazon stuff. If you pick the Super Saver shipping at Amazon, it usually goes by Smart Post. And what that is FedEx delivers to select warehouses in geographical areas, and then those boxes all get sorted out at these facilities and get shipped out on a route to the various post offices around. And of course, the company I'm working with is one of those facilities, and, you know, it's just one of their many different businesses that they do. And anyway, I got to run a Smart Post route. It's kind of cool. I got an enclosed trailer, which, you know, my dad's had forever, and it just sat out in the back field for lack of a use for it. And a while back, I asked, well, geez, if I get that trailer going, can I use that in the business instead of, you know, buying a cargo van or whatever for the bigger stuff? I just hook it on the back of the Subaru Studios here and tow that. And, you know, I can haul maybe not as much weight as a cargo van, but definitely volume. And all these smart post packages are being that it's, you know, companies like Amazon and Woot and Barnes & Noble and I don't know, there was a couple others, or DirecTV. I don't know, there's a whole bunch of them that use smart post. So I could do that. So anyway, I did that the first time on Friday and Saturday, and that worked out pretty well. I don't yet have the trailer hitch installed on the Subaru, so I borrowed my folks' Highlander, which doesn't get quite as good a mileage as the Subaru, but it worked out really good, and I actually enjoyed that. You know, I had 8 stops and about 150 miles worth, something like that. And, you know, it's all light boxes and stuff. And you get to a post office and back up to the door, and they wheel a cart out, and you throw all the boxes onto the cart that they that go to that particular zip code, and they sign a paper, and off you go to the next post office. And it was quite enjoyable. It was done by noon, and I do believe it's somewhat lucrative, so that's always a good thing. I said I kind of like the diversity of doing these courier runs mixed in with my online stuff. It keeps me sane. I don't have to be sitting in front of the computer all the time, and I get to get out and see a little bit of the countryside. Of course, I've noticed a pattern developing. The places I go tend to be the same. Not every time, though. I've gone a few different places, quite a few different places, but like what I'm coming back from right now, it's basically the greater Grand Rapids area. I know I did start this podcast earlier, so I don't remember whether I told you where I was going and where I was coming from. So I'll re-say that. I had to deliver a package to a company in what they said Spring Lake, but it ended up being actually more or less Muskegon, but kind of the outskirts, so no big deal. And, you know, just down there and back. Like I said, I'm just around the Cadillac area of, I guess, considered northern Michigan now. When I started, I was in central Michigan. Central lower Michigan. But that's a whole other story. But, yeah, I definitely enjoy the diversity of doing this and my online stuff. And it's keeping me sane. Although I do have a project I got to get to this afternoon. According to the GPS, I should be there about 2 o'clock, and I got to tend to the dogs. I've got he's now 10 weeks old, beagle puppy. Actually, it's a beagle and rat terrier mix, but you couldn't tell it from a purebred beagle, so could be interesting, but he's pretty cool. His name's Banjo. We got him at the Sugar Island Music Fest, so I thought it appropriate to give him a musical name. And then I realized one of our other dogs, Bela, was named after Bela Fleck, who's a, if you've never heard of him, Bela Fleck and the Flecktones is the name of the group, one of the groups he's in. And he also used to be in, what was that place, something Newgrass, I don't know. He's a banjo player and doesn't play the typical bluegrass all the time. At least the Flecktones don't. It's more of a jazz fusion sort of music. It's really good. It's mostly instrumental. But anyway, so we named our other dog the Australian cattle dog, or otherwise known as a blue heeler. Named her Bela after Bela Fleck. Of course, Bela Fleck is a guy, but nonetheless, so I realized 2 of the 3 dogs we have are banjo-related. One named Banjo, one named Bela. And, of course, I still got Casey. He's getting old for a big dog. He's 13. Still getting along pretty good. Yeah, got hit by a car a couple years ago or 3 years ago and ended up having to have his hip rebuilt. And that's given him a little bit of trouble, but still a happy dog and you know, a little stiff and sore now and again. But what do you expect when you're, I don't know, what would that be? Equivalent of 90 years old in human years. Although I did see something somewhere, the actual theory on that, dog age versus human age. And it's a different amount of years depending on what year and the weight of the dog. And I figured Casey out to be about 80 years old. That was probably a year ago, so who knows how much he's aged in dog years since then. But he went with us up to Sugar Island and got along pretty good. He spent a lot more time laying in the grass enjoying life than running around causing trouble. But it was pretty cool that he was able to go along. I don't know how many more times that'll happen. Gotta face reality, unfortunately. Dogs that size generally don't last this long, so enjoying the fact that he's still happy and seemingly healthy. And we weren't really planning on getting a third dog, but the opportunity presented itself, and always kind of wanted a beagle. I want to get a road dog. Since I'm on the road as much as I am in the car, be kind of cool to have a dog ride along. So that's what Banjo is going to be trained for, is to be a good road dog and a road companion. I don't know if that's a good thing or not yet, but we'll see. But right now, at this stage of his training, he's got to be kenneled when nobody's around, because he just gets into everything. And then when you're home, he demands attention. So it'll be interesting. I got that project I got to do, but luckily it doesn't involve recording anything, and it doesn't matter whether there's noise or distractions to get that complete. I guess since the last time I talked to you, you know, we did do the music fest. It was pretty standard music fest weekend. Drank too much, didn't sleep enough, didn't take a shower for 3 days, and burned up a lot of gas. But had a great time. Yeah, it's our one weekend a year that we just sort of hang out, and I don't know as it's all relaxing, but a lot of it is. And the weather couldn't have been better. It was 60 or so at night, and it got into the 80s, I think, on the second day. It was mostly 70s, partly cloudy. You know, it was a couple years in a row there. It was just ungodly hot. And then 1 year it rained the whole time. Although that isn't terrible either, the way we've got it set up with, the way we get that set up with our campsite is my folks and myself have a camper with a nice canopy. And then we also have a standalone canopy sort of tent thing, and as long as it isn't really windy, we can pretty much stay dry, and that's nice. We don't tent camp, although a couple of people in our group were in tents, but it still worked out this time. Like I said, there was no rain to speak of, and mainly the canopies were used for shade in the afternoon, and I said, it's a really good time. Where we camp, we can see the stage and hear it really well, so you don't even have to go down to the stage area if you don't want to, and still enjoy the music. They had some pretty good local groups there, and a couple groups from out of town, mostly in the folky or classic rock genres. It's kind of folk and old-timey stuff during the day, and then kind of southern classic rock at night. And that was very nice, as usual. And like I said, it's kind of a low-stress weekend, and it's, you know, notwithstanding getting 8 miles to the gallon pulling the camper up there and back, it's a fairly inexpensive weekend. It cost, I think, $20 to camp for the whole weekend, and I think it was $10 a piece for the pass. And I think another $20 to take the ferry boat over to the island. So, like I said, it's not super expensive, but well worth doing. So if you're into camping and live music and all that, it's a great place to be. It's always the second weekend in August, in case you're ever interested. Of course, I've talked about Sugar Island in past podcasts that I have done, but Sugar Island's basically in the St. Mary's River, just south of the Sioux Locks, in between Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, Canada, and Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. Sugar Island's on the Michigan side of the imaginary dotted line, but pretty mixed area there. A lot of Canadians around in the Michigan side, and a lot of Michigan people on the Canadian side. It's kind of one big area. Nice thing about the island being on a being that they don't have a bridge going over there, I don't know. I always said that it keeps the riffraff off the island, but sometimes I think it keeps the riffraff on the island. But you really got to think about whether you ought to go to the mainland or not, because the ferry boat ride, you know, can get expensive. I guess if you live on the island, you can get a pass for fairly cheap. A little punch card, but for those of us that don't go there all the time, we have to pay for the individual trips. So, but there are a couple stores on the island, so you know, if you need the essentials, you can usually get them without going off the island. Of course, you pay a bit of a premium, but you know, that's offset by not having to pay for the ferry ride, and plus the time waiting in line for the ferry. Although usually on Music Fest weekend they run it steady, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, but a lot of times they go every half hour. So you can, depending on your timing, you can wait a half hour to get across. It's not a very long boat ride, but the wait for the boat to load up and take off can be long. Well, I'm at the north end of the freeway here. If you're following along, it's in the Manton, Michigan area. The freeway ends and goes to two lanes. Something I like about living in Traverse City, and one thing that's a disadvantage of living in Traverse City, let's see, it says I still got 29 miles to go to home. And this is the closest freeway that I just got off of. So we don't have any freeways in or out. But as I've said in the past, if you find yourself in Traverse City, Michigan, you're either lost or you meant to go there, because it's not on the way to anything. Or I should say in the Traverse City area, because technically you have to drive through Traverse City to get up into the Leelanau Peninsula, but I still consider that the Traverse City area. But it can be an advantage, because, again, it keeps some of the riffraff out, or in, however you want to look at it. And the other disadvantage is you got to drive a lot of two-lane roads to get in and out, but it's not bad. and you know, the roads are fairly fast, and we don't generally have traffic jams, at least not on the highways in and out of town. Sometimes getting through town can be a challenge at rush hour and at high tourist season. We're a little past the high tourist season. Heck, there, everybody's getting ready to go back to school. Of course, in Michigan, schools have to wait till after Labor Day to start by law, which I think's a good law, I suppose, at least for the tourist industry. Don't know about don't know about how it is for the kids, but originally that law was set in place because of the farms. You know, it's harvest season for apples and a lot of the field crops. Cherry harvest is in July usually. Although this year, with a funky spring we had, there wasn't much of a cherry harvest this year. So if you like cherries, be prepared for a price increase. As, we produce, I think, about 75% of the world's tart cherries. That's the ones you make pies out of. And most of the red cherries are called tart cherries. But this area produces about 75% of the world's cherries, or 70%. I forget what the number is, but it's a lot. Washington State being the other big producer in the U.S. See, because we're kind of backwards from them. They produce 70 or 80% of the apples, and you know, 20 or 30% of the cherries in the U.S., and we're vice versa. But I guess the apples survive this year. And also, we're a pretty big grape producer and wine producer. I guess the climate here that produces cherries as good as it does also produces grapes, at least certain varieties. And we have a similar climate to, you know, wine country in California, being right on the shore of Lake Michigan, and they're right on the Pacific coast. The climate tends to be the same. The growing season tends to be the same. They don't get the snow we do, but snow doesn't bother grapes after harvest. And actually, some of them, they have ice wine that they don't pick the grapes until after they've frozen for the season. I don't specifically know why that would make it any better or worse, but maybe it's just a marketing gimmick. But how did I get off on fruit growing? Oh yeah, the school thing. Oh well, that's how I roll. Now I'm in the woods here. It's probably my favorite part of the drive, at least this direction, is this little stretch. It goes from Manton to Kingsley, Michigan. Of course, Michigan. Where else would I be? But it's, you know, really thick woods, and you know, roads decent, and it's just scenic. The only bad thing about it is in the twilight hours, you gotta watch for deer. I suppose you should watch for them all the time, but you're more likely to run across them at around sunup or sundown. Or I guess maybe at night, depending on the season. But knock on wood, I haven't ran into too many deer, literally or figuratively. Of course, I got a set of those deer whistles on the front of the car. I wonder if wonder if they do anything. I guess anecdotally, I can say they work perfectly because I haven't hit one yet. But then again, before I put the whistles on, I didn't hit one. So, who knows? So I guess I'm just rambling on. I think I'll call this a post, a podcast, a audio blog, whatever you want to call it. And like I said, be sure to check out my other stuff over at geekofthenorth.com. Or I'll be posting at Geek News Central probably, like I said, by the time you're listening to this, that post should be up. That'll be my first drive impression of the Ford C-Max with a video. And also my new podcast, if you're interested in podcasting yourself. It's podcastingtechcoach.com. And I'll be working on episode 5 to be released in the middle of this week. And I'll be talking about free podcasting services. So that'll be what I'm up to. Also going to do a Geek of the North this week. Got a few tech stories and a story about some laptop issues I had while out in Los Angeles. And a tip on how to avoid those. It was actually kind of comical, but we'll go into that on Geek of the North just because that's a techie topic. So, anyway, hope everybody's having a great week. And I will catch you later. You can catch me later.